welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. We got a little bit of a fun show for you today. We're going to be going over Texas State, and then we're going to be doing Trevor's Trivia as always. And we're going to be doing Shark Tank style, where we're going to be pitching some potentially game-changing products to our producer of the show, Connor. Connor is going to hear out all of our options. He's going to let us debate them amongst me and Trevor, and then pick the one that he thinks is the most game-changing. But first, we got to get into Texas State. It was a rather interesting tournament. We saw Ricky taking it down by four strokes over Matty O, which we'll get to in a second. Matty O, and then we had Paul McBeth and Chris Dickerson tied for third. But first, I'm talking to Ricky's performance a little bit. Mm-hmm. Pretty impressive showing. I believe you predicted him to win, did you not?
Yeah. He's dominant at Texas State.
Yeah, I think he's posted this is like the fourth or fifth time he's won this event. Although I don't think it's been at this course every single time he's won it. But regardless, you know, he's pretty dominant at this event. But the thing that really separated him from the field, looking into the stats a little bit, is his putting. Throughout the entire weekend, so three rounds, he was 100% circle 1X, which is impressive. But then he was also 62% circle 2. He had 11.18 strokes gained putting over the average person on the field. To give you a little reference, Matty O, who came in second, was at 6.19 strokes gained putting. He lost by 4.
Yeah.
So putting separated Ricky. Paul was at 5 strokes gained putting, circle 1, lost by 6. Again, pretty much dead on what Ricky beat him strokes gained putting. Chris was at 6.7 and lost by 6. So Chris obviously lost some strokes other places, but I still wanted to include him in there. But if you look at Matty O and Paul, obviously there's more to dig in. But if you look at just strokes gained putting, if they were at the same as Ricky, they beat him, or at least tie with him. So that just shows Ricky's dominance on the putting green at this tournament was back.
Yeah, 11 strokes gained is like really, really good. That's super crazy. And I mean, the reason I picked Ricky to win is just because of his track record. Texas State's just kind of seems to be his arena. And like, I don't know. He likes Texas disc golf. It'll be interesting. Like when the tour kind of starts moving away from, I feel like we've been kind of just in similar areas. We know West Coast, you know, into now Texas golf, like, you know, a lot of like wind and dry areas. So curious to see the tour move away from there and see what happens, but Ricky is picking up steam this year and looks like impossible to beat, probably regardless of where they go. So I think everybody who's gonna be chasing Ricky Wysocki right now seems like it.
Well, I mean, his performance at Waco, he was in it, but he obviously didn't push the lead. Open at Belton, he won, I do believe. Yes, he won the open at Belton. There was a battle between him and Paul, that's right. Although that wasn't a fully stacked field. You were missing some players.
It was close.
One thing that I also wanted to bring up, I forgot to write this down, so bear with me as I pull it up really fast here, is Eagle McMahon. You know, we had talked about him. He's the highest-rated player in the world currently.
Yeah.
He finished eighth place here, which so far this season, he won the Las Vegas Challenge, 47th at Waco, eighth place at Texas State's. Kind of surprising two tournaments. I will say that there has been some type of circulation regarding a slight back issue with Eagle. It came up after one of his rounds at Waco. He started using a cart around then. There hasn't been a lot of public stuff about it as to like what is actually going on, how serious is it.
Right.
If you're a player in Eagle shoes and it's serious enough that it's affecting your game, you would think you wouldn't be playing.
Well, personally, you don't want to like be this guy, but like there are cases and we see it in disc golf where like a guy has a bad round, all of a sudden something's hurt. Like,
it's almost
rare when like somebody has a shockingly bad round and there isn't an injury blamed. Because I feel like Eagle is somebody who at one time he punched the ground and like actually fractured his hand.
He broke his hand, yeah.
Right. So that's pretty real.
But that's what I'm saying is like, anytime it's been something serious like that, we've known every detail about it.
I've seen disc golfers before that like have played all the mediocre spans of their careers have been surrounded with like, oh, well, they've been dealing with this injury, you know? And like, I'm not like saying that's impossible, but it is convenient. And like, if you are injured, just don't play.
That's what I'm saying is Why, if,
don't
if,
play hurt.
If your back's injured to the point that it's affecting your playability,
right,
and it's affecting your like ability to even carry your bag during practice rounds, which I don't know the extent of any of this. I just remember seeing one post around Waco, and I believe that it is, there has been another post somewhere else still alluding to this. If your back's hurt bad enough that it's going to affect your play and you want to say that that's why this is happening, yeah, then you shouldn't be on the course.
Right.
Especially if you're one of the best players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Why risk it?
Yeah.
You know? But regardless, back injury or not, it has been a pretty bad showing from him to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You could say he's always been very open that he's not great at woods golf. He doesn't like woods golf. He did win Idlewild, but one thing I'll say about Idlewild is it's a lot of ripping shots.
Yeah.
One thing that I think Eagle has like struggled with, and when he talks about woods golf and talks about struggling with wood golf, what I think he's referring to is more touch.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're someone at Eagle's skill level, obviously there's going to be weaknesses. And I think that that is probably his biggest weakness, is just like touch shots. Because if you look at stuff, he likes throwing. Simon's a very similar player before his injuries, where they like throwing stuff very hard.
I agree, yeah.
Because that's why I think a lot of people are always shocked, like, holy cow, look at how far they're throwing putters. Look at how far they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because they're just more comfortable throwing 90% power than they are taking stuff off. Whereas mm-hmm. a player such as Paul, Sexton, even Ricky, you know, you'll see them taking power off and throwing a mid,
mm-hmm.
or taking power off and throwing a fairway to achieve certain shots, whereas you'll see Simon just be like, no, I'm going P2 and I'm ripping it.
Yeah, there are guys who whose games, like, and it's even been me at sometimes, where like you're just like so much better if you're throwing full power. I think it's like a commitment thing.
Yeah,
a lot of guys, like when you try to take something off of your throw, it messes with your release, because you kind of make, a lot of times you get like an early release, your back is, you're backing off the shot, so your arm's not coming through, and it throws off your timing. But I do think it's like a really valuable tool, although it is difficult. But like it really helps with speed control, and also like when you're throwing slower shots, you know, you can eliminate larger misses, especially when you hit trees and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. The kicks are going to be a lot more
minimal.
Because
when you're throwing huge rips off of with putters, even if it's a putter which doesn't bounce as much, you hit a tree at the wrong angle, you're flying in the wrong direction. So
especially
when
you're throwing with the power of them.
Yeah, when you do think about guys like Eagle, you don't really think about touch, thread the needle with a putter type player at all, really.
Yeah. I think that's where he's always like, when he's talked about struggling in the woods and stuff like that, I think that's more where it's coming from. I think that's where, and people, not to get into ratings, but people have always said, what's wrong with ratings? This right here is what's wrong with ratings. Because
mm-hmm.
you can look at the start of the year, you can look at whatever you want, and Eagle's not the number one player in the world right now. He's not. It's Ricky right now.
Yeah.
And yet Eagle's the highest rated. But when we put so much emphasis on ratings, if ratings were nothing but another UDisc stat, if they were the same as like strokes gained putting, or, you know, anything like that, like the circle 1x percentage, if they were given that same, like, spoken with that same breath of like, oh yeah, if we look at Ricky's stats, you know, he averaged 1070. I don't actually know what he averaged, but he averaged this. His strokes gained putting were this. If that's the breath it was spoken in, I'm all for ratings. If it's just another analytic.
The problem
as soon
is
as
though,
we try to, like, say Eagle's the best in the world because he's 1056 rated, when that's just not a true statement.
The problem is it's an all-encompassing stat, which is why people like it. Like, it's like, it's not like one part of your game. It's the whole round and then all of the rounds. And then it's also the only stat that's accessible to the masses, because like, you're not going to, unless you're like most C tiers you play in, or even A tiers, like you're not going to be seeing your putts inside C1. Like, so that's the only stat you really have to go off of. So I think that's why, you know, there's the big emphasis on ratings, but I agree. It would be nicer, because I think round ratings are a useful tool round by round to see where the field like is stands compared to each other. But yeah, it's when it becomes like the like calling card of a player, like they're almost like identifier of skill as a player is your rating. That's when it becomes really misleading. Like, and just like, if you were new to disc golf, if you just, you know, got into disc golf today and you're like, okay, so the players have these ratings and that decides how good they are. Well, let me see who the best rated players are. Like, you would be so misled.
Mm-hmm.
You would be really confused when you saw like the guy from Texas who's 1028 rated, who's like his first rating ever, and you'd be like, oh, so he's not
1040,
yeah. So you're like, oh, so he's not a top 10 player in the world? Like, no, like there's 1020 guys that smack him around. Like, it's,
well, see, that's where I think you made a good point in that it should be compared to the field to a certain degree. Because again, this is the last thing I'm gonna say about ratings during this podcast because I get sick of talking about it. But Ricky went 1050, 1064, 1078.
Yeah.
Okay, to win a national tour event. So if we go back to let's go to Las Vegas Challenge and look at what Eagle averaged. Eagle went 1071, 1066, 1079, 1090. So Eagle probably averaged, what's that, probably like 1075. So Eagle averaged his rating wise at Las Vegas higher than Ricky's highest rated round at Texas States. So you're going to tell me that Eagle's win and play at Las Vegas Challenge was that much better than Ricky's play at Texas States?
No.
That's where that is my biggest qualm with ratings.
Yeah, if you look at it just in the event,
good,
it's not a problem.
It's like flight numbers. It's just like flight numbers. Flight numbers are a good tell within the manufacturer, but when you try taking N of a flight numbers and comparing it to dynamic disc flight numbers, it's not a good tell anymore.
Yeah.
When you try taking Las Vegas Challenge ratings and comparing them to Waco ratings, they're not a good tell anymore. If you want to look at Las Vegas Challenge and see ratings across that field, that's great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, good point.
But the second you take it away and bring in all these other factors, it screws everything up.
Yeah,
but
good point.
Speaking of ratings, we had 1034 rated player. I believe that was right. I was just looking at it. Matty O. There might be some players that are out there that just got into disc golf. They're like, who's this Matty O guy? He's bursting onto the scene. You know, he just came in second. No name.
He's been around for a long time.
You'd be wrong.
Yeah.
He's a PDGA member since 2001, but he has events on his PDGA account dating back to 1999. Weird fact about him, he's never won an Elite Series or a major, which is kind of weird because I feel like I used to hear his name a lot.
Yeah, he used to be pretty big.
His best finish I could find at a major or at a big tournament was third place at Worlds in 2009.
Interesting.
The year Avery Jenkins won it.
Yeah,
it went Avery Jenkins, Josh Anton, Matty O.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, he's kind of a fun player to watch. He always has like some type of interesting flair to his style, normally like a headband. I feel like he always lives in sunglasses. Very Alabama player. Some years it looks like he didn't play that many PGA events, but on the Nick and Matt show, I actually heard an interesting statistic. Well, not really a statistic, but an interesting thing. They were talking about that apparently Alabama has like their own sanctioning thing.
Really?
So there's like a is it Southern Alabama Disc Association or something like that. Can you look it up, Connor, really fast? Could you Google it? Search like I wish I would have looked it up. Search like Alabama disc golf sanctioning. But yeah, they were saying that he plays apparently a lot of events like that, and they have like their own sanctioning body.
That's
separate
curious.
Than the PDGA.
I wonder why.
It might just be able to do leagues and stuff like that without having to have the overhead fees and
I guess you just kind of do it under the table.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's curious. They were saying that basically some of the years it looked like he didn't play many events, but it's because that was only PDGA and didn't include the Alabama Disc Golf Association or Alabama Players Association. You see anything about it, Connor?
Not really.
No.
I mean, who knows? It might just be kind of
a really underground thing. But basically local events in Alabama. It sounded like there was some type of sanctioning that went on to them. I do know like North Carolina has like one website that all North Carolina events are on. And it's like a statewide thing. Not quite to the same level as a full-on sanctioning body, but
yeah.
I don't know. Interesting thing, state by state. Everyone does it a little different.
Yeah.
The FPO leaderboard, to be quite frank with you, made us look like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I mean, do we even know what we're talking about anymore?
I mean, it's
half the comments just commented like, finally, Hunter realized what we realized. These guys are idiots. we have Haley King taking it down by 3. Holly Finley second. Rebecca Cox third.
It's just, I think the women's game right now is just kind of like somebody new gets hot each week and wins.
Yeah,
now, Haley
like,
King's been
what
around.
What the heck is going on with Paige and Kat?
Yeah.
It's only been three events for Paige.
I don't know. It's still a bit of a mystery with Paige right now. I don't know what exactly is going on. But I will say, like, yeah, it seems like an FPO, like a new player is just like bursting onto the scene and like making a statement win. Like
Kona.
Each week, yeah.
Haley.
It's super interesting, although, and I think it's like it's super good for FPL, definitely.
It's just we literally had podcast episodes where we were like, this is not the year for parity. Or once the European like and Finnish women get over, then it's parity. And I'm like,
problem is,
how dumb do we look right now?
Yeah, the problem is Paige is just like not.
That's what I literally
Paige.
Said. So
I don't understand.
Unfortunately for Paige, these past two tournaments, one of her big things is she wants to be the first 1,000 rated woman.
Yeah.
She is still the forerunner for that happening. Mm-hmm. If anyone's going to do it, it's probably going to be Paige right now. But unfortunately for her, based on estimates that I was looking at, it looks like if all these rounds are thrown in, the 906 and the 908 rated rounds that she's thrown between Waco and Texas States will be dropped from her rating, so they won't be counted because of the two standard deviations. But with all the rounds that will still be counted, it looks like she'll be dropping to about 989 rated, go down 7 points. So she had pushed up to 996, broke all the records to be the highest rated woman of all time.
Right.
Now she's back to 989 is what it's going to look like. I was extremely confident that she was going to remain dominant just based on the field and her record against the field.
Yeah.
But the thing I didn't take into account, and the thing I think no one did, was I don't necessarily think the field has gotten that much better.
No, she's just not playing well.
She's just not playing good.
Yeah, I think it, the door...
Like she's literally... Like, the field is shooting some of the same rounds they were shooting in years past.
The
she's
door's
just,
wide open. She
when
just,
have we ever seen Paige sneak in 900 rated golf?
She's just struggling. I think... Yeah, we kind of based off our prediction was like, well, nobody's going to catch Paige, and we didn't think Paige was going to get any worse.
Yeah, Paige
and
caught
she's
the
just,
field.
She's not playing well, so she could turn it around, you know, just as quickly. But
I'm wondering if she knew if she like. I'm wondering if she hit 996 and then knew at Waco and Texas States, if I play good at both of these events, I've done it.
So she,
I got to 1,000.
Pressure.
That's the only thing I can think of, because when have we ever seen? I mean, I guess
every once in a while
before,
she stumbles,
but
it's
like
rare
six
to see
rounds
it.
In a row.
Yeah,
she hasn't popped off for a great round, like a typical Paige round, in like two tournaments.
Yeah, we'll see when the tour gets back to like more familiar stops. I think we have Jonesboro next.
Jonesboro's
and
the next
she
big one.
She shredded Jonesboro last year, did
she
not?
She did.
So that'll be the curious one.
I
want
to say she averaged like 10:30.
Yeah,
or
I'm pretty sure she went out to Jonesboro and destroyed it last year. So if she goes back out, rips Jonesboro to shreds, then like I'll probably be like, okay, it was a fluke. But if she struggles at Jonesboro and she loses at Jonesboro, I'm gonna be like, huh.
One tournament's
going on.
A fluke, two tournaments.
It's
harder
it's
to be
pretty
a fluke.
Convincing, yeah. But if it's as I'm saying, if she goes somewhere where she was so dominant,
I'm not confident enough right now, three tournaments in, to say like we're not going to see a dominant Paige year.
No,
because she's 1-2.
Yeah,
tournament wise. But actually, did she win Las Vegas?
I believe so.
Yeah, 1-2 tournament wise. But at the same time, I'm not super confident in saying we are going to see a dominant one anymore.
Yeah, it's a bit more confusing than we thought.
December, I was 100% confident. Like, if anyone's going to catch her, it's going to be Kat. Katrina Allen is doing about what we expected. I mean, she's always around up top. Katrina Allen's been playing pretty consistent. She's either been in, like, second. She's been in, like, top five, I feel like.
Yeah.
She's always kind of there, but Paige has been kind of all over the place. For Haley King, though, for her taking down the win, there when you're looking at the stats and how she did it, there wasn't really any one particular stat that she just beat the field, like Ricky's putting, for instance.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a solid overall performance. She just didn't really mess up. She didn't have any outstanding stat performances, but she also didn't really seem to struggle.
Yeah.
Looking at statistics, she just played solid golf all weekend and did what she needed to do. And then, you know, like I said, we had Holly Finley and Rebecca Cox sneaking up in there, which were also, you know, to I don't want to say surprises. Rebecca Cox, though, I have heard is fully reworking her form.
That's what I heard. Yeah,
so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to see it. I didn't get to watch any of the coverage, MPO or FPO, this past weekend. I'm probably gonna have to go back and watch some of it, but
yeah, I like to see that with them players that, you know, they're not scared to make drastic changes to their form, you know, especially like slightly earlier in their careers, to where it's like, hey, there's something I can fix now that's going to really help me in the years to come, whether it be, you know, an actual like skill thing or even an injury prevention thing.
Yeah.
Like I think some people get complacent or even just a little too like scared. Like they don't want to change something and risk, you know, messing up their game, but you know, it has to be done. You know, Tiger Woods, that guy changed his swing a bajillion times mostly for injury prevention as he got older. But like, you know, it's a real thing. You know, you gotta trust yourself and be able to change. I think as disc golf advances in the world of like form analytics and we get coaches in the sport who mm-hmm. are very experienced in these things, we'll see more people change their form. And a lot of it will be on efficiency. So using their power more efficiently to propel the disc and get better distance and accuracy, and on protecting their bodies. We're going to see a lot of that happen as the sport gets bigger. As these guys that are playing right now, as they finish their careers and they learn a lot and they learn what to look for, what to avoid in form, and some of them start coaching, because I bet it'll happen. We're going to start seeing that more.
We did actually see recently, I'm trying to remember where it was at. It was kind of near one of the tour stops that several pros were. We saw like a, what's the name? Like a motion tracking 3D software that basically, yeah, they were just getting a lot of data. They didn't really say what it was for. It was a coach, a sports athletic training coach. They were posting on their Instagram, but basically they were just in a wide open room. Is like, have you ever watched the like NBA 2K where they put on those body suits with all the like ball? Yeah, they had that on the players, and they were having them throw into the net, and it was tracking it on the computer. I probably could not find it. I know Ezra was one of them.
The thing is, in disc golf right now, go ahead.
It was also, I think, Paul Ulibarri. They did it for him, and then also Ricky.
Yeah.
And there was like, Kevin Jones made a post about it, but it was like a funny post, just laughing at Paul.
I know Ezra was posting on his story.
Disc golf is such a
3D motion capture.
Let me see that. Who was? Does it say who was doing it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to look if there was a link to the
disc golf is such a he said she said when it comes to form right now. Like we can look at slow motion camera stuff, but we don't have like sensors and 3D imaging to where we can like really see like, hey, doing this thing in your form actually makes this better. Like we just kind of know from what the pros have learned and told each other and all figured out. But like there is just a wildly untapped area of analytics to where like there will be a day, like right now we know basic things about form, like, oh, you should keep your hand out of the way by your side and you should pull through here. But there's a lot of things that are still in dispute. And like there will be a day where like there are way more absolute things that we know about disc golf form that are like, you need to do this to get the most form or get the most out of your form.
So like it's coach. If you want to look it up on Instagram, person doing it was coach_Chris_Taylor. We're not going to show any of the pictures and stuff just because we obviously don't have the rights. I'll show Trevor. There's pictures on it of like them breaking down the angles of their like pull through and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's some videos of the players in the like full on suit.
What else does he do, this guy?
So it looked like they were at a golf coaching facility.
I'd figure there's a lot of the golf technology could be applied to disc golf for
and
sure.
It seems like this is just it looks like a lot of his content right now is based on disc golf, but it looks like he is a golf coach.
Yeah, because the thing is, golf and disc golf are both, when it comes to form, they're both a game of angles. Like golf, when they put you in those things, they're going to like take you to the top of your swing and they're going to look at the angles of your arm in relation to your body. They're going to look for like triangles with your wrist and your elbow. And then they're going to do the same thing in your downswing and your follow through. And disc golf is like very much the same thing. Like, it, as we figured out, it's going to be all about like, okay, these are the angles you want in your arm on its reach back, and this is the angle you want on your follow through. Like that's where that stuff is like valuable. It's just going to be like, who's the guy who's going to be able to actually figure it out?
This might be the guy. I was scrolling back through. This is again that coach Chris Taylor's.
I didn't even hear about that. That's going to
Instagram
be crazy.
And he has a video like breaking down Paul's on here. They basically took it from Paul's practice round.
Yeah.
Took his first throw and his 24th throw of his field work. And put them right next to each other and showed how they're like identical. It was basically saying there's a reason like his form has been so like repetitive, basically, that he's able to mimic it. So 24 throws in, he's doing the exact same thing. I don't know. Very interesting.
That is very interesting.
Very interesting thing that I don't know how we got to that topic. But yeah, 3D tracking. I don't know what this data is going to be used for. It looks like he's even breaking down his putts. 3D view of Ezra Aderholt's putting form. Even talk through about his follow through. If you're a nerd when it comes to this type of stuff,
I'm fascinated by that. I would
check
love
out this Instagram account. It's pretty cool. I'm very interested to see what he does with it. Biggest 3D motion capture event in the history of disc golf happening soon. Stay tuned. Very excited. That was March 18th, and then the next day, Thomas Gilbert, Ezra Aderholt, Haley King. Ricky Wysocki. I don't know why I said his last name that way, but I did. Yuli.
I wonder him to release the motion capture files to somebody who can develop a video game now.
Yeah.
That's what we're missing to have in Disc Golf Valley, athletes like throwing off the tee pad.
It's interesting. He had Thomas Gilbert doing some 360s too. I wonder if he was breaking down kind of like
momentum and like how it actually helps you.
Like how does, like what makes that actually go that much farther. He also has like some overhead shots at Ezra throwing. I don't know. There's a lot of cool data in there.
That is
I haven't sick. Actually looked that deep into it until right then.
That's pretty cool.
But it's definitely very interesting to see kind of what that does for the future of disc golf, because that you're right. That could be something where we've all seen and we know generally just from visuals of like, this is the consistencies. This is what every pro does. But once we have actual data and it's like, hey, every pro that's throwing over 600 feet, their arm gets to 90 degrees at this point in their pull through.
Right.
Then we'll start being able to be like, oh, well, that wasn't a coincidence.
Yeah, it's probably going to have to be compare and contrast. Like, they're probably, that's what they're going to have to do is like find all the pros that throw really hard and really well and find the similarities. And that's probably how it's going to work.
Yeah. And then be like, these are the definite things that you have to do. These are things that some people do, some people don't. Yeah. And really break down like what is the most important and what is like some stuff that you can change your leeway based on body type and stuff like that. Very interesting data. Definitely gets me excited. But it's time to move on to our fan favorite segment of the show, Trevor's Trivia. What do you got for me today?
All right, so I kind of found a fun one today.
I thought it was
more interesting, I should say.
I hate interesting ones.
So I found an article from UDisc. UDisc has really cool data.
Yeah, they do.
And if you're familiar with the UDisc app, one of the things you can do when you're following the live scoring is you can favorite a player.
Mm-hmm.
And their score stays on the top.
And they keep track of how many people favorite players.
And yeah, UDisc, of course, keeps track of their most favorited players. And at the end of the 2019 season, they actually released an article showing the top 40
favorited
players. And I thought this was interesting because I was like, you know, this is kind of one of those things that tells us not necessarily who the best players in the sport are, but who the people actually want to pay attention to the most.
Yeah.
Which is really cool data. And like, if I'm an outside sponsor, like, this is the data we care about the most. It's like, who do people like?
Who do
to
people
watch?
Actually care about?
Right. So I think I've got the top 10. This is MPO and FPO are considered in this list.
So they're both in the same list?
They're both in the same list.
Okay.
I'm going to have you try and name. I'll have you name as many of the top 10 as you can, and you get. I'll give you 5 strikes.
Okay, I do not remember. I've seen this list, but I do not remember any of it.
Yes,
I know Paul was number one.
Paul is number one.
I knew that. Ricky's definitely in the top 10.
Ricky is number 3.
Who's number 2? Paige gotta be up there.
Paige is number 8.
Well, that makes me feel like Katrina Allen's not on the list. Paige is number 8. Paige has to be the most starred FPO player. Oh, boy. So I have Paul, Ricky, Big Germ.
Germ is number 9.
I'm getting scary close.
That was a good one.
So this is 2019?
This is the end of the 2019 season.
So Yuli wouldn't have been on there yet. Yuli's popularity hadn't peaked. So Nate Sexton would be on there.
Yeah, Sexton's number 5.
Yeah.
Man, you're getting some of the good ones.
How's there 10, though? 2019. I'm trying to think if there was another FPO player. No one was more popular than Paige. So, like, Katrina Allen could have snuck into 10th. 2019, there would have also been Evelina and Henna. There's more MPO players, though. Eagle.
Eagle's number 2.
Simon.
He's number 4.
So I got 1 through 5.
You're missing 6, 7, and 10. Pretty impressive so far.
I'm trying to think 2019. Who were some big... Calvin Heimberg?
No. Hadn't quite popped off yet.
No, he hadn't. That was a bad guess.
That's one strike. You're missing one who had a massive 2019 season. Biggest season of their career.
Kevin Jones.
Well, that's one of them, but I wasn't even talking about them. He's number 6. Number 7 is I'm talking about.
Who had a massive 2019?
Think about
what happened in 2019.
Think about the tournaments in 2019 and who won them.
I know Paul won. No, yeah, Paul won Worlds in 2019.
Mm-hmm. What about the other big one?
U.S.
Yeah.
James Conrad.
James Conrad.
He's up there.
Number 7. He was a wagon in 2019.
Off in 2019.
Everybody was loving him. Yeah, because
everyone was so surprised he didn't perform great in 2020.
That was his year. So now you're just missing number 10. You got four strikes to play with, but this is a tough one. This is one that kind of surprised me.
Number 10. I'll just say Katrina Allen.
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. So there's no other FPO players then?
No.
So Paige is the only one.
Three strikes left.
Three strikes. You're out.
I've been very impressed so far.
I'm impressed I got this far. This is the best I've done to Trevor Trivia.
You've done really well.
I've got to win this
one. Get in that big germ in there. That was a pretty impressive one.
2019. Kind of a sleeper pick. Oh, boy. This is really tough.
Yeah.
I feel like I've named everyone I wanted to name. Who else could have been up
there? Still a relevant player. We'll say that. It's not like they're irrelevant.
Could have been Greg Barsby?
No. Good guess, though.
Because he has won Worlds in 18.
So good guess. But no. Two strikes left.
I already got Kevin Jones. Emerson Keith?
No. Another decent guess,
though. Because he had a great 2019. Yeah,
last strike. I will say he's a likable guy. He's got... But he's probably, you know...
Nico.
No.
why did you say likable guy? I go Nico.
Yeah.
I thought you were about to say, but he also has a lot of haters.
The answer is double G, Garrett Gerthy.
My mind would have never got to that point.
It's a tricky one. But
that's surprising, actually.
I was surprised, too. Pretty impressive. I think double G is just likable.
Yeah.
He has a lot of fans. But you did pretty well there. Not bad.
But I mean, he's very likable, but I mean, I'm not starring him.
Yeah.
Because being likable.
I bet you if we had an updated list, Ezra would be very high. And
I would like to see at the end of 2020.
Yeah.
Did they release? They didn't release it.
I didn't see one. Because it was an article specifically. It wasn't specifically for this. It just was a supporting data they were using, talking about like the value of players in social media. Because they also had what's funny is they had a list of Instagram following. And like I was looking through that and like Kevin Jones had like 13K and now he has like 43K.
Yeah.
Just a couple years later. And Paul has gained like 60,000 since that list. He had just hit 100K back then. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Someone also released like a similar list with YouTube.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
Might have been UDisc.
Maybe.
Well. I love data like that.
Yeah.
I hope they release the 2020 one, though.
I do, too. Brody would be very interesting. Brody,
Brody, I think, would be in the top 10 starred players.
Yeah.
He'd have to be, because I think even people who hated Brody wanted to see where he was at.
Oh, yeah.
Only thing, though.
He only played a couple events in 2020.
Yeah. Does that change it?
No. Unless they unstarred him.
But then could he get two if they restarred him?
I don't know.
Weird. It's definitely an interesting part of that fact. All right, so now here's what this is something new. We'll do this probably every once in a while because it's fun. It's funny. Originally, we were thinking like April Fools, right? Today's April Fools when they're listening to this.
Yeah.
We were thinking like, oh, what funny product could we come out with for April Fools?
Right.
Then that led into this segment because there's not really a tournament coming up next week. The next one is a Silver Series event. I actually forgot the name of it, but it's next weekend, not this upcoming weekend, the weekend after. So there's not a lot going on this weekend. Actually, one thing that we should probably talk about on Grip Locked is we have both announced our retirements from competitive disc golf. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it, really, to be honest. I mean, we went out to North Carolina, and confidence was soaring. We thought we were so good at disc golf, and I mean, I've never been... To be fair, we both played putrid.
We were able to place top 50.
Well, that's all I'll say about that. But like, yeah, we played putrid. But like, even going back and looking at like where people finished, I was like, you know, had I even played, I guess it's tough because those aren't our home courses. Because like, I know I could rate well, or at least I think I could rate well at like the courses we play a lot. But when I was looking at the scores, I was like, man, even for me to actually rate well, even if I had played well, like I still wouldn't have rated that well. Like,
no. Over
we were way out of our depth.
I'm gonna be fully honest with you. I've thought through my rounds, right? And I thought through my rounds over the course of those three rounds. I think there's about 10 strokes that I could very easily have made up. Seven of them are from 30 feet to 20 feet.
Yeah, and you still wouldn't have been, like, close to dead
last. But that's
last.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Is like, if I go into this tournament and I give myself 10 strokes, where does that put me? There I am. I would not even cashed.
Yeah, like I'd have been like, we'd have been like middle of the road in like the AM division.
I would have been happy if I gave myself 10 strokes and I'm like sitting at 9 under par.
And this is a pity party at this point.
Yeah, no, that was criminal. I should never have brought that up. Anyways, free to cut that, Connor.
We're retiring.
So therefore that has led us to,
we're
going
to stick to throwing paper plates and whatever else we make and cover them in peanut butter all over the course for challenges.
No, I did not realize how many people DNF'd.
Yeah, man. Because they got tired of seeing us out there struggling.
Six, seven, well, eight people DNF'd. You beat eight people.
About that. It's because of the storm.
Yeah, that storm. I almost DNF'd. I took a long, hard look at myself in the car mirror.
Painful memories, man. You
have all right, you know what? Let's get into a fun segment. Fun segment. I'm sorry. I just thought of it.
I put that in my past, man.
It's literally Twitter bio header.
You dug it right up. That's funny.
Like, it's not in your past.
It's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. All I know is my rating is not going to be 9. What is it even right now?
We were talking about how we can like
the 980.
It'd be
something.
Cool if you could deactivate your rating on
987.
PDGA.
Yeah, I want to make that hidden.
I want to deactivate my account.
I mean, also all those people that comment and say like they'd beat me with their left hand type bite. You might have this.
They
weekend.
Might.
There's a solid, I'm starting to believe you. I think you're right.
We
think
are
that you
not
could've.
Good.
We suck.
Check out my in the bag dropping zoom.
That's funny. Oh man. So some disc changing products. We're gonna be pitching this to Connor. If you see us looking past the camera, if you're listening, we're pitching it to you as well.
Okay.
And you can let us know in the comments. Or if you're listening to this on audio, be sure to DM us what you think that you would, which one won. But Connor's the end-all be-all. You are the decision maker
yes.
here. Okay, so Trevor and I both have three each. I'll pitch one, you pitch one, I pitch one, you pitch one. And then...
let me bring the house down with the last one.
Then Connor, I'm switching the rules up a little bit.
Ew.
After we've pitched our three each, I want you to pick your favorite from each of us.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we fight over that one.
All right.
Okay.
So then me and you debate on why our product is better than the other person's leading product.
Okay.
I've got a pocket full of cash, and it's weighing me down, ready to dump it into some disc golf merchandise.
This first product, Mr. Cuban, is...
We'll save it, because mine are all very cheap. Now continue.
So, let me put you in a scenario here, okay? Have you ever been just playing disc golf, you know, hanging out, and you want to be able to throw farther, right? Everyone wants to be able to throw farther. Your disc just seem to sometimes fall out of the sky. Well, that will happen no more with the disc fan. Basically, what I've invented is a detachable fan that you stick to the bottom of your disc. It can be changed from disc to disc between drives. You only need one of these. Unless you like it being a part of the disc, we can figure that out later. It's detachable right now. You attach it to the bottom of your disc, and basically, you throw it. The disc fan keeps the disc in the air by blowing air down, kind of like a helicopter or a drone.
Man, I can't
it's
wait.
It's also
dude.
Remote control to where once it gets to where you want, you cut it, so the disc will then drop out of the sky.
Okay, here's the problem. No, we'll make our pitches. We won't debate them until
I'm in
we
the
have
middle
to
of my
debate.
Pitch.
I'm just saying, because like, then we'll go on forever.
So now
defending
you can,
our intellectual
now you
property.
Can control. Basically how much glide you give to your disc or how much you take off, because the fan will weigh it down. So if you want zero glide, just don't turn the fan on.
Okay. Connor.
Checkmate.
Any thoughts on that? That was something.
You're asking for my thoughts on it?
I'm
you want me to give my thoughts
I'm just
on it
wondering
right now,
if
or
the,
you want
to
wait?
I'm just wondering,
wait,
like,
because I don't want my hopes
if
crushed.
The fan okay, speed yeah. isn't high enough, then the disc will be spinning faster than the fan, therefore making it useless. That's my
the
biggest.
Fan speed.
There's no rebuttal
high.
Right now. There's no rebuttal right now.
The fan okay. speed is lightning fast.
That's just what I was wondering. Okay.
It's military.
All
right,
listen.
The Blackhawk.
Listen, this idea I'm going to go with first. I've had this idea before. I think it encompasses more than just disc golf, but it applies disc golf as it does to really any sport or a lot of facets of life. Okay. You know, if you watch this podcast, you know, Connor's got to sit here and listen to Hunter and I just yap at each other like a couple ankle biter dogs, you know, for an hour at a time. You know, we debate a lot, right? We love debating. Guys that are like into sports like you and I, like we defend our positions with a lot of emotion, right? So I know you and I, like we read, And Connor, you're the same way. You know, you read a YouTube comment or something on Reddit or social media and you want to defend yourself, right? Like you, or you think they made a dumb point, like you want to reply, but sometimes debating in a comment section is so frustrating. You can't type fast enough. You can't interject in somebody's point. It's really frustrating. This is where Disc Debate, an app, comes into play, okay? What this app would be, it's not like your normal, you know, like Reddit thread or like social media thread where you debate like that, okay? It starts as a thread, but then once a debate becomes like legit to where there's a real debate, it goes to video, okay? It's a live debate. You're face-to-face with this person, like a Skype call, and everybody else joins in the debate and they vote on who is winning the debate. They give you points. It's like there was a show on ESPN called Around the Horn where they did this. They had like people would debate a subject and the guy would award points to who was winning. So that's how it would work. Basically, you get a chance to put your money where your mouth is, basically. Like now you got to go face-to-face with this guy and hold up your point, and everybody, the jury, decides who actually is winning. And then once a winner is decided after a certain amount of like time, and I think another way it would work is like it would go, there'd be like a time for both of them to talk at the same time, but then there'd be like one person get muted for a certain amount of time. The next person would get muted. And then once somebody loses, they're just muted. The other person just gets to gloat in their victory. And that's how it works. So that's Disc Debate.
If you're listening at home and you like this idea, just check out our Discord because all of those capabilities are within there.
But
that's minus the vote.
Can I ask a question?
It's not made just for that. That's the whole point.
That's what I was going to ask. What sets this app aside?
It's the software.
To where you don't just do it on Discord.
Right. So it's the software of where like there'd be the voting system. You can put people in like a Skype call and like the whole muting system, like automatic. I think it's just, it would be more so the ease of access to use
the muting.
No, it'd be automatic. It'd be like a timer. It's like there'd be like time for you to speak, time for the other person to speak, time where you both can speak. That's how it works. And you can
It's like a digital court.
I actually pitched this idea in like college to like some like business and tech majors because like I think if this app existed for like all sports, forget politics because like it would be, but like even sports, like besides the fact that kids would get cyberbullied, like, and it would get ugly really fast and there'd be a lot of name calling, like how does this thing not already exist? Like Twitter threads are so ruthless. Like imagine if we take these Twitter threads and we put them to video and get to watch people debate each other. I don't think I'd ever get anything done again.
And it's smart to where you have it on a timer where you have no, like you've got
to. Right. You have to listen to them. You have to.
I don't hate the idea. I don't hate it.
All right. That's my first idea. Hunter.
All right, that's garbage. First off, I'd like to say that the name of the segment is Game Changing Products. So I'm over here trying to come up with ways to change the game. Trevor's up here to figure out ways to divide the audience.
I was just told to do a disc golf related product. That's literally what I was told. You're the one who typed out the note and thought Game Changer sounded cool. So continue. Yeah.
This I'm trying to.
Do you want to debate about it on my app? It's called Disc Debate. Go ahead.
I'm trying to think of the start.
Yeah, you're
of my next
frazzled.
Pitch. No, I'm not.
Is every single one of your pitches going to go, let me put you in a scenario?
No.
You can't see it on camera, but he's shaking right now.
So let me put you in a scenario. I'm just kidding. Have you ever just thrown a disc, though, right? And it hits the ground and it takes off on a massive skip. I know Trevor can relate because I saw one skip over a fence about 45 feet in the air. Let me introduce you to disc gel. It's a spray-on adhesive. It's a spray.
Go ahead.
Next. What's your next idea?
It's a spray-on adhesive that allows your discs to not stick to your hand, but the ground that they land on.
So what's that made out of Pro Fairy dust? Like, what?
No. So basically, it only lasts for 10 minutes. You spray it on the bottom of your disc. That way, if you don't want it to stick on the next hole, you can still get that nice flare you want. But you spray it on your disc. You throw it. Wherever it hits, it sticks. That's it.
This is your everyday XT Nova.
Well, yeah, but sometimes you don't want the overmold. So it allows any disc to stick like an overmold or really bendable disc.
I'll buy this product, but I'm going to go in with you, and it should be a detachable overmold.
No, because then you have to feel the overmold.
You're right. That's a stupid idea.
All right.
Disc gel.
disc gel.
I do. Well, I do have a question.
Patent pending.
What is
how do trademark. You how do you get it off?
Is it environmentally friendly?
It only lasts 10 minutes.
It only oh okay.
It just evaporates into thin air.
No, it just becomes it doesn't. It's no longer sticky after 10 minutes.
Okay,
just leaves residue all over your disc.
Okay. No, that's the point. It dissolves.
It's magic.
Okay.
Yeah.
That spray is magical. All right. Now to pitch you a product that could actually exist within time and space in our current living situation.
This definitely
could. Here's another scenario for you. All you little disc golf fanatics out there, I know you've been in this one, right? It's like 11 o'clock at night. You're trying to get good at disc golf so bad. You just watched a tutorial on putting that's going to change your life forever. And all you're trying to do is throw some putts. But it's like you can't make noise. Your parents are going to kill you. Your neighbors are going to kill you. Okay. This is where I introduce to you the bedtime basket. Okay. The bedtime basket
exists.
It does not exist.
Keep going.
Is a basket that instead of using metal chains, uses like a heavy rubberized chain. Still catches the disc, but it's quiet. Even the basket itself is made out of a soft material that cushions the blow of the basket of the disc. So putting is virtually silent. You never have to worry about annoying your roommates, annoying your neighbors, annoying your parents. You can putt anytime, day or night, quiet putting. How does this not exist already?
It does.
How? Where?
I mean, the rubberized chain doesn't.
The rubberized chain is the good idea, though.
Yeah.
But there's already something you can use on a basket that you already own, so you don't have to buy a second basket, and it just makes the basket silent. It goes around the pole and zips up.
Okay.
And it makes it where the chain ring at the bottom doesn't hit the pole and none of the metal touches the pole.
That's great and all.
Dead
but
silent. You only need one basket.
It's not the same effect as chains catching a disc. When you wrap something around it, it does not catch the same way.
It does. This is like this.
I'm here to tell you, Hunter.
You've used it.
I'm here to tell you. I have.
Okay.
I'm here to tell you.
Here's your case thrown out. You haven't used it.
No, the Innova one that has like the netting around it. No. I know that's not the same thing, but it's the same effect.
No, it's not. This is literally
you're not allowed product. To rebuttal on products. Did we not just decide that?
That's fine. Well, that one, I was just making sure Connor knows that.
I'm here to tell you if a disc
for the sake of Trevor, please don't pick that one because I could. You will not win with that product.
If the basket I just described existed, people would buy it. And better yet, you just make a basket that has interchangeable. Like you pick up the real chains, you drop in the rubber ones, and then it's also convertible.
That's what you can do. That the MVP makes that, I think.
Yeah, there's a couple ones that do like.
But there's no rubber chains.
But nobody
though.
Does the rubberized chains. I think that's the thing.
The most the part
it wouldn't
I like,
catch the disc the same.
The part I like the most about that is that it's called bedtime basket. That is a pretty good name.
See, but I think you're thinking
you've
got like
to say
a grippy
that's
rubber.
Name.
They're gonna be like
hard plastic rubber that'll make a noise.
No, they can be slick. They can be slick. If you can make a spray that just disappears into thin air, can I not make rubber chains? Like, are you kidding me right now?
That is a good point.
That basket is a good
idea. Your idea was just a throwable drone.
Yeah. Like, what? Your ideas are trash right now.
No. Hey, they're all good ideas.
Thank you.
The bedtime basket would sell. I'm surprised it doesn't
exist.
Yeah,
that's a good name.
It would sell. Go ahead. Third idea.
Okay.
I hate it.
So there's been this recent debate going on, right, about the time, how long time on cards, throwing time. There's a lot of rules in disc golf that involve time.
Yep, I remember that podcast.
30 seconds. Mm-hmm. There's also the how many minutes before a disc is lost. There's a lot of like 2-minute warnings. A lot of disc golf rules involve time. Some of those are very uncomfortable to call. Okay, some of those are very uncomfortable for you to be the person that calls, especially if you're the person that has a stopwatch and you're hitting it.
Yeah.
This takes out the awkwardness.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Clock strike.
What is it?
I just spit like crazy. I can't get a clock. So dumb. Clock shirt. So basically.
Clock shirt?
Basically. 10 minutes to get these together. It's a stopwatch on your shirt. So basically, as soon as Nico or whoever, not putting anyone in this situation, as soon as some random guy, we'll just use the name Nico. We'll pick a random name. As soon as Nico steps up to his lie, you hit your side. That's how it works. Start and stop. Double tap. You double tap and reset. You punch your side. Then it starts working. It starts ticking so that the rest of your card.
It gets to zero, blows up. Like, what?
So the rest of your card can see where the time's at. And then they're responsible to make the call because I can't see what's on my shirt.
What if they're facing the other direction?
It has an alarm. It beeps. Okay. At 30 seconds, it says, Nico, time's
Why
up.
Would Nico wear the shirt?
When Nico would never wear the shirt. I'm wearing the shirt. I'm on Nico's card.
Oh, so it calls it for you.
Yes. So the shirt announces 30 seconds. It also has settings on the left. I'm coming up with some of this right now.
Okay, no, that's good.
It has three buttons on the left, one for 30 seconds, one for 2 minute warning, and one for lost disc.
Nice.
So then you push the lost disc as soon as you walk into the woods, and nice. Now it takes out the awkwardness.
So now it's
and
more
the confrontation.
Awkward.
Yeah. No, it takes out the confrontation where I'll have to tell you 30 seconds. I'll be like, oh, my shirt's going off. You took too long.
My shirt's coming off. You took too long.
I don't know what to tell you. Question the shirt.
Okay. Right, I've got a couple things.
That's really
clock
funny.
Shirt.
First, there's one thing I really appreciate.
The best idea of all time.
Clock shirt. I love it.
Can somebody, like, if there's anybody like that does graphic design listening to this, like, can you make these products?
Am I worthless to you?
I'm just saying.
If only we had somebody that could do that in here.
Yeah, okay. You know what I meant.
Yeah, real design.
So I've got a couple of things
clock
I want to say about clock
man.
Shirt. First of all,
should we make a shirt?
First of all, clock shirt, and if they don't follow it, you come out with Glock shirt.
Oh gosh!
But I think clock shirt is a good idea. What I appreciate about it is that you can be more protective of people's toes because, you know, remember last podcast we talked about how a certain somebody was cutting off people's toes so that they wouldn't, you
exactly.
know, rat on them. Mm-hmm.
Now he's just so, cutting off Jerem's shirt and Jerem's shirt's in a jar.
So Big Sexy is probably really appreciating that.
Yeah.
The thing I don't quite appreciate about it, though, is that it gives a certain angry someone somebody to target because that alarm goes off and he gets angry. Who's wearing the shirt? I mean, he's
everybody's
going after him.
Clock shirt, man.
I mean... This idea is a multi-million-dollar idea. Everyone has them on now.
All right, does it Bluetooth to everybody else's clock shirt?
They sync, so everyone on the card will have the same.
Oh my gosh,
they'll have the same clock.
Okay.
It's a universal clock shirt.
I like it. I don't quite see the purpose of it over just having like a board that's like a timer, but I like it better.
Well, how are you
get
a board in the middle of the woods?
Well, I like it better though. Is what I'm saying.
It's on your shirt. Mm.
Yeah, I do like
the
shirts.
The name clock shirt is the funniest.
We can also
ever.
We're gonna come out with a 2.0. This is still
a
prototype,
top.
But no, on the back, on the back, it keeps track of your score and your competitor scores. The hard part is some
clock
people don't want to see
shirt.
It, but it's a scoreboard. It's a full-on scoreboard, so then you can just like par, like tap leg once.
And then
bogey,
it says on it,
tap.
It says, let me see my time, and then it says the time on the other side of the shirt.
That, we tried coming out with that in like 2002, and it flopped.
Oh my gosh.
All right, so what are we about to debate? What are our two
I
products?
I have a product to pitch
sorry.
Still.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Clock shirt just brought the whole house down. I thought it was
last.
Over.
All right. Listen, we all know disc warping is an issue, right? Okay. You all right? Disc warping is an issue, all right?
Yeah.
Except it's not. It's not an issue
it's not
anymore.
Anymore.
Not with the warp doctor, all right?
The warp doctor.
Let me tell you what the warp doctor... You know, if you get a disc and it's a little out of shape... Or maybe you're even trying to just get it into the shape that you feel like it really should be. You've all heard of the hot water trick, right? All right. It's kind of a pain in the butt. You know, you pour water in a disc, you got to put weights on it, whatever, hot a pan. It's a mess a little bit. It's not very convenient. Okay. So I'm here to tell you, you ever seen the like the neck pillows that you microwave, right? So think about something like that, all right? Fill with those beans. It's weighted. It's very heavy. And it's kind of like malleable, right? So it can kind of take shape like because it has the beans in them, okay? So you warm it up and you sit in a disc. And because it's weighted and malleable, it pops that disc into the form it should be in. And it's also hot, so it heats it and reshapes your disc. The Warp Doctor. I'm kind of proud of this one.
I wouldn't be.
I thought of that on the way to the post office. And I was like, we might be onto something. Call me, email me if you are interested in making millions. What do you think about that?
Well, I've got my rebuttal ready to roll if you choose that one. But I'm not going to give it yet.
I can. Oh, okay. I mean, I don't even know if I want to waste my time with rebuttals against your products. They're all so dumb.
Well, I like it.
You like the Warp Doctor?
Yeah, Warp Doctor.
Okay, so which one are you picking?
Okay, so can you guys just give me the title of all three?
Yeah, so I had Disc Debate, I had The Bedtime Basket, and Warp Doctor.
And I had Disc Fan. Disc. Disc Fan, Disc Gel, and Clock Shirt.
Clock Shirt is so funny.
First of all, Hunter, I'm definitely not choosing Disc Gel. I don't think it makes enough sense.
That's fair.
And I think it's magic.
It is.
And I don't want to go on the magic train. I want to go on the science train. Yep. And so I'm going to choose Disc Fan,
You're choosing Disc Fan?
I am choosing.
Dang it. Clock shirt.
I thought I'm choosing two.
Oh, no. One from me and one from Trevor.
Oh, okay. Definitely clock shirt then. Of course, clock shirt.
I only put time and effort into one of them.
clock shirt's the best one. Okay. All right. Say your three again, Trevor.
Mine was Disc Debate, The Bedtime Basket, and Warp Doctor.
They're all pretty good. Those are all they're very practical. You see, Hunter is a lot more imaginative, it seems like, but you're a practical guy.
I'm a creative.
You're creative.
I said, what are the problems? Let me fix them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the easiest to sell, if I was to buy one, the easiest to sell would be Bedtime Basket because it's easy to make, it's cheap, and people would buy it in a heartbeat.
I agree.
So that Kickstarter would take off in the first, you know, the quicker a Kickstarter takes off, the more they push it.
Disc golf Kickstarters are so easy, too.
Yeah. Okay, zero, I'm going to go with Bedtime Basket.
$10 million.
Bedtime Basket.
Bedtime Basket versus Clock Shirt. Let's hop on Disc Debate.
First, show me the product that you're talking about.
I'll find it. I just saw it on Facebook a little bit ago.
Okay. So I'm a little more prepared to defend myself. Because you're talking about a product, like, that's great and all, but A, I doubt it muffles the sound.
Well, can we also just address the fact that you could just duct tape a towel to your chain pole, like all of
Hunter,
us did?
Hunter, how many things do people buy because they're convenient and they don't want to DIY it? Don't be ridiculous. We're talking about numbers here. I'm not trying to change the world, except with the Warp Doctor. That would change the world. But I'm not trying to change the world. I'm trying to make a product people would buy. And this is a product, like, people would buy. If I was in an apartment and I didn't want to annoy my neighbors and I looked around for baskets, I'm like, well, there's a sheet I can zip over. Let's put it this way, Hunter. You live in an apartment, right? You're not going to buy a regular basket anyways. Like, you don't just have a basket that, I can just have a basket and zip the thing over top of it, right? You're buying a basket specifically to use in your apartment. So you're not going to buy a regular basket and then the other thing. You'd rather just buy the quiet basket already.
But then what happens when you move out of your apartment?
That is beyond the point. I'm sticking with my original point. I say no more. You live in an apartment. You're looking to buy a basket that's quiet. You're looking at the bedtime. You would buy the quiet basket instead of buying a normal basket and then another thing. I really think you would. And I think the bedtime
basket
would be easy.
Here's the issue with the bedtime basket. Okay. Yeah. So it still has a rubber pole or a metal pole.
No, it doesn't have a metal pole.
So the whole basket's rubber.
It could be.
There is zero chance of that catching the same way. There is zero chance of that catching.
You're going to win saying that.
Yeah, there is zero chance of that catching the same way.
Okay, Hunter, the logistics, if you want to debate the materials, like, what, like, how's their wiring going throughout your shirt? What's the display made out of? Like, it's a concept. It's called a concept. I haven't had time.
There are shirts that have LEDs and screens on them. Mine is very doable.
I haven't had time to think over all the materials. Just know that I know there's materials out there that could make this basket.
No,
agree, Connor? Yes.
No, because any basket that would catch as good as metal would have to make noise. Or catch the same. Rubber might catch better than metal, but that's going to make you a worse putter.
I don't think that's a huge problem.
If you have...
I think if it catches a little bit better, I don't think it's a huge problem.
No, because rubber...
If you're hitting the chain you're aiming at...
You have a grippy disc.
If you hit the chain that you're aiming at, like, you threw a good putt.
That's the same argument as if you're hitting the spot you marked on your pillow, you threw a good putt.
Did you not, though?
You did, but that's what we all
It's
did.
A little bit different. It's a little bit different. All I'm saying you're looking at the same thing.
Is the better product in this scenario is the one that's already out there that goes on the pole, your normal basket's pole. It's thin, it zips up, and then basically it just mutes the chain. So all you hear is...
Did you hear my previous argument? I'm talking about the people that are looking to buy a basket.
Now they're going to buy a basket that sucks at catching discs.
You don't know that.
Or
it hasn't been made yet.
Discs.
It hasn't been made yet.
All I know as a fact is it would not catch the same as a normal basket.
Where are you sourcing that fact?
Logic.
Where is that logic being sourced? Like, you've never seen this
product. Have you ever
played
on a rusted basket? The second the texture, a basket with rusty chains?
What does that, okay, what are you?
Just, have you ever played on one?
I probably.
At Vince's farm?
Sure, yeah, okay.
Remember how
those,
like,
baskets also have like five chains on them.
Yeah, but remember how good they caught discs?
No, they were awful because they had like five chains.
You don't remember the rusty basket that I'm talking about, the disc catcher.
I don't remember.
You could literally hit one chain and it would catch it.
I think you're lying.
How?
I think you're lying.
It's because the disc already is either made, has partial rubber in it or grippy plastic.
I think I'm done.
Every putter does.
I'm done defending my product. We're probably going overtime. It's time for you to...
Why? There's no time limit here.
It's time for you to defend your product.
I haven't gotten to rebuttal your product.
I don't even know that I want to even talk about your product. It's just so stupid.
I haven't even got to rebuttal yours. I don't even have to defend mine because yours is irrelevant. I'm defending product that would never.
You got something to say?
It's not over.
He's got something to say.
I did look up an alternative to chains for disc golf baskets on dgcoursereview.com, and a guy named Leroy says long, delicious strips of bacon.
What the frick does that do anything?
Thank you.
No. Okay, the discs are already made of grippy plastic, the putters. Okay. Is that a fair statement?
Okay.
Is that a fair statement?
Your whole argument, though, like you saying it's going to be too good at catching discs, I don't think that's a problem. So therefore, like your argument is not making any more progress.
How? Because, how is that not a problem?
Because I've already decided I don't care. So I'm still going
to
sell it.
You would make your practice basket.
I'm going to say, here, wait. Hey, listen to this. It has to be better at catching the discs so that your discs don't go flying into walls, hitting the floor, making more noise. Therefore, it's even better at eliminating
It gives you false confidence, and you'll be a trash putter on the course.
Hunter, you are a trash putter on the course.
Yeah, 100%.
And so am I.
Now imagine
Could you get, bro? How much worse could you get?
Imagine if you practice putting on mock X's at home where everything was catching.
I don't think it's going to change my putt.
I was the greatest putter of all time.
And no.
When I would miss low left and it catches it
all
the time.
Paul had a mock X in his garage. I practiced on it all the time. Did not get any worse.
Said you're a trash putter.
I'm at the bottom.
So it didn't make you any better. Because it was catching putts should have been catching.
No, it didn't make me better because my game plateaued like 5 years ago.
But it was also catching putts it shouldn't have been catching.
I can't say that with confidence.
How can you not? We played on him at Hogback.
And I can't say anything like that with confidence, man.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm debating a brick wall. You understand what I'm saying.
I got all the information I need.
Putting on a basket that catches better than a normal basket is bad to putt on. Especially when there's a product out there that accomplishes the same thing.
I think it comes down to the way you practice putt.
especially when you're... Are you muting them? Thank you. Especially when you could practice putt on the same basket that's going to catch just as good out on the course, but is also muted.
Not the entire basket. Not the metal cage that you're going to inevitably hit.
So you're going to put rubber on the cage? Why don't we just make it a trampoline?
No, the cage...
Let's just have it bounce right into the wall.
Oh my gosh, Hunter. The cage could be made out of
If you're going to
so
debate me, at least
things.
Think your product
The cage
through.
Could be made out of so many things. The cage doesn't have to be super rigid even. The cage could be pretty absorbent. Like, the cage doesn't have to be. Because if you hit the cage, you already missed the putt. So all it has to do is be able to catch those discs when it lands.
Why don't you just make the whole
basket
a pillow?
It could be made out of something very soft. The cage, realistically, could be made out of, like, a kind of, like, stiff foam or pillow-type material. As long as it doesn't bend when the disc lands in it. If the disc hits the cage and it bends, like, as long as it pops back into shape, it doesn't matter. You missed the putt. That's kind of what I was thinking for the cage. It'd be very quiet. It'd be very light, too. Very cheap, very affordable. Basically, you can get this basket for three low payments of $19.99 plus shipping and handling.
Yeah, now he's dead.
Bedtime basket.
At thebedtimebasket.com/.
I'm not going to lie. I like it, but there are flaws.
There's a lot of flaws. A
lot of stuff that can work out.
But I do want to hear about Clock Shirt, a virtually perfect product.
Exactly. Quiz me. I already got the patents on everything.
I don't know how I can quiz like lunacy. I guess I'll just ask a few questions. first of all, like, why would this not be like a courtesy violation? Because it's going to make noise like right in the middle of people's throats.
Because it's a rules call.
Okay.
So would you saying you foot fault would be a courtesy violation because I talked during your throw? Or like what foot fault would? If I said like that's 30 seconds or up. Oh, lost this time.
If that happened mid throw though, because if they've started a throw and it goes off, like I feel like that's kind of a courtesy violation because they've started their throw, you know.
If they're in the middle of their throw, it could be. Yeah. It could be perceived as that. You might have to rework that part.
Okay.
Okay. Well, see, I'm willing to work with you to make my product better.
Wait, hold on a second. I only have one more question. Is it a dry fit?
Yes.
I'll buy it. I'm speaking at the rest of the disc golf community. If it's dry fit, they'll buy it. That's all there is to it.
If you have any rebuttals, I'm willing to make this product better and find ways to improve it.
I do think
there's a little bit of danger with having like 15 synced up alarm clocks on the course.
No, it wouldn't be 15. It's only one card.
How loud are they going to be?
It's four. They're not loud.
Okay.
They're not loud at all.
So the only people that can wear them are playing on the
card. Yeah, if they were two. Yeah. Yeah. You would sink on hole one.
Another rebuttal. What if it rains?
They have like a laminate protection over it. No, there's actually shirts. So, like, I've owned one before.
All these guys are going to have like to get
lights and stuff in them.
All these players are going to have to get these like with all their logos on them from sponsors too.
Oh no, they have to screen print a T-shirt.
I'm saying that's going to be kind of annoying. Like, why do you, why, like,
almost as annoying as a
basket. So your product basically your product basically hinges off of players being forced to wear them because they would not wear them otherwise. So you're,
no, my product base is based on introverts like myself, yeah, who would not want to make a rules call.
I can tell you right now, an introvert is not going to wear a giant alarm clock on themselves.
It doesn't have to be super giant, you know. We can figure that out.
Like, if that's your pitch, is like the it's going to help out the shy guy. Like, he's not wearing it. I'm pretty introverted. I'm a lot less likely to just like be accept myself not calling somebody than to wearing a giant alarm clock that everybody stares.
I mean, if you're okay with cheating, that's fine.
All right, I've got my call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's gonna be disc juice. What's it called?
Disc gel.
Disc gel. Well, first I have to say I like both of them a lot. I really do.
Don't pander.
I really do like them both a lot.
What is it?
But I'm gonna say my thing. Don't react and yell because I've got things I want to say about it. All right,
done yelling.
I'm gonna choose bedtime basket because
this is
you got more
baloney.
No, this is the reason why I love clock shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I think that it's creative. I think that it is.
This is the second time you've jipped me out of a challenge this week.
That's true. I think that it is good for a lot of sports. Would be great. But the problem I do see with it is I don't see it catching on.
Let me be fully transparent here. I did not know we were taking this segment super seriously. None of these products I expected to be good.
Backpedal.
I would buy a bedtime basket.
I will say bedtime basket is it's a good idea.
Even if it caught extra.
Even
I was just trying to win.
Yeah, should even if it sucks.
Should we cut the podcast and start a business?
Even if it sucks, you could sell it so easy. Oh, yeah. I mean, people would be all over that.
I just can't believe it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I don't
There's
know.
There's so many people that put
nothing,
in their
nothing
apartments.
Exists. I was literally looking it up that nothing exists.
I know. I'm surprised it doesn't exist.
And the DGA shift, like, just add that.
That's
as
what
the,
I was saying. I was
edge.
Really thinking about that. I was like, the mock shift that they make is such a cool idea. Like a changeable basket, you add a new one that's the silent chains. Like, come yeah. on.
And I do think you could just a foam layer on the bottom.
Yeah,
mutes that. I mean, it was great. I was. There's no way I was winning that. I knew it, but I was committed.
I've
I
had
was
that
fully
one
committed
for a while.
No, there's definitely some errors in how good it would catch. I do believe that. But I also fully believe that
I don't think
that is not a flaw that would make it not sell.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever not bought a basket because it's going to catch too good,
yeah.
Darn it.
Yeah. But if I was marketing against you, that's what I would do. I'd say, it's going to catch so good.
My competitor, the extra noisy basket, says bells. The chains are bells and it just rings. All right, go ahead.
All right, well, welcome to Make That Call. Your competitor has a clock shirt. It goes off in the middle. No, okay, so... This one is actually a very interesting make that call. I'm going to be fully honest with you. This intrigued me.
All
right. So a player on your card is stuck on the edge of the woods where they can't quite straddle out. No, scratch that because you saw this happen to me. You're on a play on a long par three. It's open, but then it goes into the woods at the end.
Okay.
Your competitor, I was going to describe me in a weird way.
Okay.
I step up there. I throw my pink Zeus on a hyzer line. Mm-hmm. Looks great. Little early. Skips to a mediocre spot, but it's right at the base of a tree. About the worst lie I could possibly end up in.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. To where your competitor, me, this actually happened, has to lay down to throw. Mm-hmm. So he has to fully extend out.
Right.
Now, he came prepared this time because he had to do it before. Mm-hmm. So he gets in there and he has the bright idea of, you know what? I'm going to use a cane. And I'm going to lean out and put the cane under my arm so I can rest out and still be supported, leaning out backwards, resting on this cane to throw from. So I pull out a cane from my backpack, rest on it, and then I proceed to throw, park my upshot for the three. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Legal or not? And if it's not, what rule are you calling him on?
I always forget about this rule because it has to do, like, if you're, like, leaning on a tree, and I think it has to do with...
Well, that's a slightly different scenario than a tree because it's an artificial product you're bringing to the course.
Okay. Well, by you saying that, you may have just given it away.
Is it legal or not? And if it's not, what rule are you calling them on?
I think Okay, I think if there is something behind, if something is behind your lie, you're allowed to use it to. If there's like a tree or something behind your lie, something naturally part of the environment, you're allowed to support yourself with it. If it's behind your lie, I'm gonna say if it's artificial, like a prop, you can't. That's what my answer.
So how much would you choke them? Oof. Like, is it just a stance violation, like same as a foot fault?
No, he gets a misplay.
Misplay, gross misplay.
Gross misplay.
DNF, no, he didn't break any rules. So the phrase is a part of a player's body, and the PDGA says that should be interpreted to include not only clothing, but also mobility devices such as canes or crutches. So
that's why I used the word cane.
As long as they are providing support. Probably I could have used the word stool.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to get called out, so they said cane or crutches.
That's like them covering their butts, like making sure they don't like stroke some old guy who needs a cane and loves the game of disc golf right there.
Yeah, but
you just,
I mean,
you just twisted that rule, but I'm not saying
I mean, did I though?
I'm not saying you broke it. I'm just saying I think like they made that rule for that reason and like you could
But like if
twist
you go
it.
Into it, if you look at the actual rule, like it literally like it there's no objection on like anything being used behind your lie.
That's fascinating. I don't know that.
As long as it's not aiding your actual throw, as far as like helping you propel the disc.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, like, in theory.
Interesting.
I could have, like, when I laid out, put my elbow on my stool if I had it with me, or on my bag, even maybe.
Hmm. Didn't know that. Don't like it.
All right. If you want to purchase the bedtime basket or clock shirt, head over to foundationdisc.com where
or
they're not available.
Gel.
Disc gel is available now. But thank you guys so much for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show. Leave a comment down below what product you think would win. And if you have any game-changing products of your own, not super serious ones, because if you put a super serious one, there's a chance that someone finds it and actually uses it, and then I don't want you to get screwed out of that, much like we probably will be with Bedtime Basket. Can we just claim that?
Do we,
you heard
like,
it here.
Can we buy the copyright like right now?
Well, someone would never name it the Bedtime Basket, but someone, Connor's like aggressively, someone's definitely going to, after hearing this, come out with a rubber chain basket.
Yeah.
And we're going to play this clip in small claims court.
Yeah.
So and lawyer up. Get royalties. So.
I want justice for my intellectual property.
We're on record. Bedtime Basket.
Disc fan.
Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. More discs are hitting the site. A lot more discs are hitting the site as we speak. We also have some pretty exciting stuff coming up. I can't really say much, but it's exciting.
Pretty cool.
And that'll be it. We'll talk to you next week.